Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
Not too long ago, a friend gave me a copy of a magazine entitled Yes Magazine, a magazine I'm kind of embarrassed to admit that I had never heard of before. It devotes itself to animals and the environment and making the planet a better place in general. How could I have not been aware of this? I have no idea. She gave it to me because the cover story was entitled, Can Animals Save Us? And unbeknown to her, the author of that article, Robert Sapolsky, is one of my most favorite scientists. Not only is he brilliant, he's eclectic, he's got a great sense of humor. I mean, what more could you ask for in a scientist? Sapolsky has been studying all of baboons for more than 30 years, particularly their social behaviors. I'm now old enough that I've kind of grown up with some of these scientists. And what's really interesting is that it seems like the only people who are sure of themselves are the very young, the very naive, or the very inexperienced. The more you work in a field, the more you realize that those absolutes that we all yearn for to simplify our lives and our work, they're simply not there. What's also interesting is that not only do scientists who spend a lot of time studying a particular field take a broader and broader view and increase the spectrum of what they consider normal behavior, but also as they do that, so does the discipline. So that when researchers started studying primates, years and years ago, there was a temptation, a very strong temptation, to assign characteristics to a specific species and basically say, well, that's the way it is. Kind of comparable to what you hear people say about some breeds of dogs or about male dogs. Male dogs are more aggressive than females. Or all pit bulls are evil, or stuff like that, or all Siamese cats are sneaky and can't be trusted. Well, scientists do the same thing. And you can always tell when a science or a particular discipline is new, because everybody's scrambling to legitimize themselves by coming out with these sort of God's honest truths that they think will give them credibility. Then pretty soon, the more objective researchers in the group start to realize that, hey, you know, it's not that simple. Behavior is a lot more complex than that. In the article, Sapolsky was talking about baboons, and particularly two troops of them. One troop that was called the garbage dump troop. These were the baboons that clustered around a big tourist center near where his own troop, the forest troop, was. And the garbage dump baboons, as one might expect, were attracted by the garbage generated by the humans in that facility. After a while, the more aggressive and less social males in the forest troop used to sneak over to the garbage dump and steal food too. Then tuberculosis swept through the garbage dump troop and also affected those from the forest troop who were foraging in the garbage. That changed things for the forest troop because not only were the males who were left less aggressive, there were also twice as many females as males. And so over a period of time, as you would expect, those particular males fathered more offspring. This changed the social behavior of the forest troop. They became more social. They started grooming each other. They softened. Now we might say, well, that's just pure behavioral genetics or some such thing. But normally, males come into the troop from other areas. And the same thing happened here. And yet when they did, even though they came from more aggressive roots, they picked up on the more peaceful culture of the forest troop. This is kind of a variation on the theme of how violence is self-limiting. Nobody wins a fight. The winner is just the one who loses the least. And where violence pays is when your opponent is much weaker. Sometimes what we lose sight of is that sometimes the opponent can be a microorganism. So if we have a relatively benign, weak population of microorganisms associated with, for example, a garbage dump, and the humans that create it, and the other animals that scavenge it, and the flies it attracts, then it pays. It pays to go after one's own kind aggressively to keep them from getting more garbage than you get. But if the microorganisms become more pathogenic, now that kind of behavior doesn't pay. The upshot of all this is that anyone who is still engaged in the genetics or environment battle is like so yesterday. Because all you have to do is look at the studies. Oh, hell, you don't even have to look at the studies. Go out in your yard and look around. Look around your neighborhood. Go into the schools. And you'll see plenty of examples there of both genetic potential and environment, social factors, and culture playing a role. Always the cultural influences and the familial influences. Other species claim them too. So we need to look at how animals achieve peace, even though they don't want to, or even though it runs contrary to their species nature. Because learning from them might be our only good chance of saving ourselves.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.